Today's podcast is with Alexey Zakharov, the CEO of Otter Finance. Alexey previously was at Cash App and Lyft before that. And Otter Finance is a Web3 mobile wallet that makes buying USD payments using USDC very easy. They allow self-custody and effectively allow you to move money like Venmo, but on the blockchain. We talked about why they chose Solana as the back-end blockchain, how the global macroeconomic changes are making Otter Finance much more compelling, the growth that they're seeing after doing direct integrations with Circle, and much more. I hope you enjoy this conversation. I found it very educational, inspiring, and it was interesting to hear Alexey's take on the economic situation that we are currently in. If you like these conversations, please give it a like, thumbs up, wherever you listen to Around the Coin. All right, Alexey.
Hey, Mike.
I'm excited to chat with you. It's an interesting time. So you're now running Otter Finance. You started it a few years ago, relatively small team with an awesome background, having been at Cash App and Lyft and other cool places. Maybe we'll just start off with, like, where do you see the current tension in the financial markets in the world today? Obviously, the US being the global reserve currency, there seems to be so many different takes on where this goes. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on just generally where you think we're trending and how the currency of the international markets fit into the future, with crypto being a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely with all recent events, people, like, I feel like slowly losing trust into the established institutions that been there for a long time. I think, like, crypto and I think stablecoins especially is a very good foundation to kind of bring back attention from the speculation, which was mostly dominating the industry for so many years, and bring it back to, like, practical use case of transferring money between countries and provide, like, a fundamentally much better rails for that. And I think, like, stablecoins like USDC, like, I think is one of the best tools actually to bring back trust in dollar worldwide, because for me we almost, like, at the kind of a point where United States either can take a path of further isolation with maybe releasing its own CBDC and imposing a very strict rules on this digital form of dollar, or it can actually embrace stable coins like USDC or Tether and kind of create this open API for digital dollar that everyone around the world can use and benefit from. So I think we're at this exciting inflection point, and I'm really hopeful that enough people who care will push the idea for this, like, more open dollar rather than a closed dollar that nobody will want to have, and will further kind of impact and increase de-dollarization that people are start talking about.
And would you agree that the primary difference there between these two paths that you just identified, being the Tether USDC path and then the FedNow or the centralization path of the federal government, is the primary difference there the ability for the government to stop transactions and maybe, like, take people's money directly? Whereas, you know, ultimately they being the Federal Reserve, still control the total number of dollars in circulation. So in that sense, the federal government still maintains a strong grip on the global economics, even if we're using, like, stable coins, USDC and Tether. Curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I think, yes, fundamentally, federal government still have power to, like, emit more dollars and so on. But I think with CBDC approach, they actually have like a direct control of individuals' balances. So it's basically not even like behind the scene, will be a blockchain most likely. It will be just a big database that United States maintain. And then if they don't like a particular individual or a company, they could easily have a tool to like make this balance zero or completely freeze it. While like with approach like USDC or Tether, it's like some sort of like separation of power. So for like US government to directly try to like stop the money movement, they have to work through like this different set of partners, and they have to have a proper legal basis to come to them. And yeah, I mean, it will be a much more like complicated and non-straightforward process. So maybe only like few oligarchs that will be on the radar could be blocked. But like for like regular people, smaller customers, it will be like much harder in this case.
Interesting. Yeah, I certainly see the obvious threat of coming down the middle where the US government said, hey, we're going to launch a CBDC. It's not going to be on blockchain. I think there's too much prepared resistance to that. And so I think what seems to be happening, and you tell me your thoughts, is it seems like the government is not calling it a CBDC. They're calling it the FedNow program. And maybe they even built it on blockchain, but they're the only node. And so the average person kind of gets lost in the details where it's like, oh, I thought CBDCs were bad and the government's not launching a CBDC. So therefore, like this FedNow thing, maybe that's not as bad. Do you think that the government will most likely try to take the route of maximum control, but then just cloak it in a different branding to try to deceive people?
I think some people will try to push for that, but I think there is enough people on the other side who want to create a more like open dollar. And I think like Circle is one of those players. Yeah, so I'm just hopeful, and to extend how like we can influence that, we will be pushing for like an open dollar with ability for people to choose between USDC, USDT. And now there is a momentum in Europe with EuroC as well. And I think Tether has a similar product as well. Yeah, so I think it will be very interesting next 5 years, and we will see who will prevail. But yeah, like in China, we have the opposite example where, yeah, Chinese government have, well, I believe through WeChat app, they have essentially digital form of yuan payments that they fully control. And at any point, they can do anything with balance of each individual in the country. So yeah, I feel like we can see that as an example, and maybe we will think twice before we will like create a product like that. I mean, as an
issue. It certainly seems like. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think a lot about what would be the kinds of things that people like you or me or other people could do to influence the overall conscious perception of the direction that the country should take. Politicians largely, I think, are operated to get as much power as they can. And so powers generally, and specifically in this country, by the electorate. So if people like your ideas, then they'll put you in power. I don't think politicians really care. Like, I don't think if you sat them down, I think the reality is they're just trying to get elected, and they don't really care what financial structure that the US takes. And so I feel that ultimately it's about how do we as like a people who support cryptocurrency as a method of transaction for the flourishing of Western society, how do we create a compelling narrative and align the efforts instead of just kind of like hoping that it works out? And I'm curious if you've seen anything. I mean, I see people on Twitter that seem to be active, but is there any kind of like story or maybe centralized effort isn't the right word, but like, is there anything that people can like click on to learn more about why this is a good path? Because last thing I'll say on this is that I think the tendency or the temptation for the federal government to capture more power by centralizing everything under the FedNow/CBDC program is, it, unless it's met with a sufficient resistance, it will happen. And average people that are working 9-to-5s and some other jobs, they're just not going to know or care enough until it all plays out and then we look like China. So yeah. I see a path for the West to take the path of like, you know, if China goes yin, we go yang. If they go centralization, we double down on decentralization. And that to me seems like that's the message, right? It's like, don't try to out China China. Try to do the inverse of what they're doing. And then you can actually have a compelling economy. But I'll put that to you.
Yeah. Well, I think there are like two, well, approaches. I think one is that like building a product that allow people to like use, let's say, USDC stable coin as a easy form of payment that they can use day to day. And just have a like a really great product to do it. It, I think, is one healthy approach to popularize that idea. And then if, let's say, 40 million people in US are using product like this and relying on it, then it will be much harder to like reverse access to like something like USDC. So the good news with the most recent version of our product or Otter wallet, you can connect it to any bank in the US, and then you can essentially move money on your bank to a wallet in form of USDC and then transact with others through Solana blockchain. And then you don't really need any knowledge how like blockchain work. It will look and feel exactly like Venmo or Cash App looks, but by using it, you essentially support this next generation open dollar platform where like each customer have like basically direct ownership of that dollar amount they hold on Otter wallet. Because the big difference between Otter and let's say Venmo is that in Venmo case, all your dollars are held on a basically Venmo big bank account that of Venmo. And with Otter, each customer actually have their dollars directly on the blockchain secured by the private keys that they control. And what Otter made it simple is that we automatically like back up those keys to your personal iCloud or Google Drive. So you don't need to worry about like technical nuances of how to keep those keys safe. But at the same time, like Otter doesn't have access to those keys and as a result to your money. So I think like if people like start learning about the importance of like open dollar and like access to stable coins by simply using this product in day to day, they will create a case for politicians, because like, why would you ban something that people like to use and it provides them value? And I think on other side, I think adoption of dollar is very strategically important for United States as a country. And I think sooner our politicians will realize that with stable coins like USDC or USDT, they essentially increase accessibility across so many countries. And in a lot of those countries, individual people want to hold dollars, but their government or banks limit that access. So there is a demand, but then the like instruments are not there. So in this case, it's like a direct interest of US to increase adoption of a dollar is to support this open standards, basically.
Interesting. And so from a business perspective, what I'm hearing is that you outline the case that this is Otter Wallet is operating with the backbone of Solana. So the crypto keys that are used to make the transactions, while they're coming from an integrated bank API, I'm whatever you guys are using to do that, you're actually moving money out of that bank account. Like, how does the flow of funds work? So you have a person with a bank account, they connect their Otter wallet. It's like a Plaid integration, or you guys build some API to that bank. And then you make a request to make an ACH transfer from that bank. Does that go into a centralized bank, or does it go directly from a bank of that person to... Yeah, can you walk me through that a little bit?
Yeah, yeah, that's a great question. So for every customer who wants to connect the bank, we essentially create a second virtual bank account that will allow us to both send money through ACH rails and receive it, including even your paycheck. So the difference is we never keep money on that kind of transitory checking account. So it's only used to receive money, convert it to USDC, send it to the wallet, and vice versa. Send USDC from the wallet, receive it, and from this bank account, send out to whatever bank account you are using. And the authentication for external bank accounts is working through Plaid. But yeah, we are the first wallet that kind of integrated this all together, because if you tried any other wallets like MetaMask and so on, they all rely on a third party like Coinbase to basically take money from the bank, convert it to crypto, and then send from Coinbase to the wallet. I think for majority of people, that approach doesn't work, because that extra step creates so much friction that if you are not deep into crypto, it basically makes it unusable. And that's a big problem we're trying to solve, because we want to create a customer experience that will be secure and allow you to fully own your stable coins, but at the same time be connected to traditional financial systems, so you're not isolated in your own world.
Interesting. Okay. So it goes from a person's bank account to a virtual bank account that you maintain. But that bank account, it's really just used as a temporary, called maybe exchange account. So when the US dollars go into that new virtual bank account, are you guys building or currently using like your own exchange? Or would you then use like Circle or some other exchange to then go from dollars to USD? Because you guys as a company would have to make that exchange, right?
Yeah, so we have a banking partner. Banking is a service partner that helps us to create those accounts. And then that banking as a service partner have different liquidity providers connected to it. And Circle is actually one of them that allows to like very efficiently convert USD to USDC.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they make this possible, really. That underlying Circle's ability to go, like, you send them a dollar in a bank, yeah, and then they send you USDC.
And then Circle can guarantee one-to-one ratio. And there are a couple other providers besides Circle that also hold, like, pools of USD and USDC to provide this conversion. But I think like the most cost-effective right now is Circle themselves.
And I remember Circle had, there was a bit of concern for Circle during the SVB collapse, given that if you trace the money back, you think you have USDC, you think you have a dollar, but that dollar is maintained by Circle. And then Circle puts their money in SVB, and then SVB takes your money and then buys treasuries. So they don't own dollars anymore. They're now owning a certificate for the dollars in the future. Do you see enough transparency among Tether and USDC on where the money actually is? And if not, why are these banks not willing to just charge a service fee and then keep your money in dollars?
Yeah, I think both Tether and USDC provide a good amount of transparency in terms of like what assets are backing up the one-to-one ratio. I think Circle is definitely have a much higher level of transparency. I think there is a lot of confusion around, like, for example, most of the basically funds that backing up USDC are, I think, ultra short treasuries. And that could confuse people. Why don't you actually keep cash? So if you go to into details, it's actually a safer instrument to keep it in this ultra short term treasuries that actually managed by BlackRock and custodied in BNY Mellon Bank, which is like, unlike other banks, specialized in like pure custody. So then if you keep money, let's say in SVB, then SVB could loan your money or like invest this money to like some selected sets of securities that considered cash equivalent. So in that sense, like most of the money that Circle has kept was always in this like ultra short term treasuries managed by BlackRock. But the problem was that their operation cash was distributed across like, I think, 7 different banks, and SVB was one of them. So it was definitely, I feel like that was a great moment for Circle to shine during SVB crisis, because then you can say when you keep your money in USDC, your money won't be invested in like less stable up products like what SVB did. They bought like long-term treasuries, which are not stable, or they gave like some credits to founders backed up by the company shares rather than like any real assets. But because some of the cash was allocated in SVB, Circle got affected, and thankfully that got resolved when SVB deposits were guaranteed. But since then, Circle actually made sure that all the cash is no longer held in banks that can... They basically moved it to like a banks like BNY Mellon again, or a few other banks that will not have that exposure that SVB had. Hopefully that helps.
Do you agree that the federal government should have, I don't want to use the word bailed out, but backstopped SVB? Do you think that's the right call? Like, if you think about this from the mid to long-term prosperity of the country, was that the right decision to make?
Yeah, it's a tricky question. I personally believe it was a good call, but I think what's important, if there was a proper follow-up that essentially triggered the process in a lot of banks to exit from those, like, because I think 5 big banks like Chase, they were not allowed to invest in something like long-term US treasuries. But then as smaller banks got this like opportunity to invest in more riskier products. So I think that action by federal government was helpful to backstop the crisis, but the important part is that the follow-up actions need to happen to prevent such risky investments on local banks level in the future.
Good point. Yeah. And we're right in the middle of it still. It feels like it's happening in slow motion, you know, given that there's like quarterly reports on the banks, so we don't know day to day. So I want to ask you a little bit more about the business. So when you use Solana on the back end, I understood everything. Person has a bank account, they transfer it, you use Circle, you get USDC. Why use Solana instead of just managing the keys for them? And then, tell me that first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you need to pick one of the blockchain because the keys are used to like access funds on one of the blockchains. So basically we've had a choice between like doing it on Ethereum, Polygon, and so on. So at the time, and I think it's still the case, Solana actually provide the highest speed of fastest settlement and the highest throughput for like transaction volume. So our essentially goal was to make sure when you transact on Otter, it will look and feel like you're transacting on Venmo or Cash App. So you send money and instantly someone else received it. So with Solana, the settlement time is actually less than a second, which enables us to have this experience while allowing people to directly own their funds. On Ethereum, for example, it will actually take about like 20, 30 seconds before the recipient could see the funds. And I think it's around like 5 to 10 seconds on Polygon. And similarly with fees, on Ethereum, it could cost you like from $2 to $5 to send money. On Polygon, I think it's like 20 to 50 cents. And then on Solana, it's less than 1 cent. So when you look at those kind of fundamental characteristics of Solana, it becomes a clear choice for payments. And at the same time, based on our analysis, Solana decentralization level is very high, and it's higher than Polygon. It's not maybe as high as on Ethereum, but there are more than 3,000 decentralized validators spread around the world that now service Solana network. And from hearing from their founder, Anatoly, he's constantly pushing to increase amount of validator distribution, and actually Solana Foundation give incentives to like validators that are in new remote location around the world, and they constantly trying to increase distribution of those.
That's awesome. Yeah, sounds like the right choice. And I agree, speed is very important. When you make the value proposition to a customer, right? Say I tell my cousin who's not into crypto, and I say, you should really try out this Otter wallet. It's better than Venmo. The initial value proposition is unclear to me. I shouldn't say unclear. It's not immediately felt. Because Venmo just works and Otter just works. So I use Venmo, why switch? I think the case that you made a subtle point, but I think it should really be like the central point, which is that Venmo is the best choice when the banking system is very stable and the government is not interfering with the transactions themselves. But if you believe that we're headed towards a path where the government is going to have direct ability to stop and reverse transactions, then start using this wallet today and support that future. You said that, but I think you tell me, like, how is adoption going? How are users receiving it? Where are you guys in terms of like numbers? I know you've raised a couple million, $3 million.
Yeah.
Can you mention like users or revenue or any of those sorts of things to indicate traction?
Yeah. Well, right now, like most of our products we provide for free. So we more focused on like growing the customer base. So I think like until we had this banking connection, there was like a very slow adoption of the product, because in the end, it was like still hard for people to get money in, to get money out. But since we launched the banking connection about like now a week and a half ago, we actually see a constant spike of interest. So we, just in this week and a half, we got over 2,000 new customers who like registered and connected their banks. And we saw over $100,000 transferred from the bank to Otter to start performing transactions. So we see like this like steady growth. I won't say it's like a hockey stick yet, but it was a very big change in terms of like customer interest, because I feel like when we delivered that bank connection, people can actually like really see the difference between what Otter does as a wallet and then any other wallets on the market. I think there's still a lot of things we can do more in terms of customer value proposition. I think the interesting part that when you go beyond US, the value proposition gets even more clear, because in countries like Argentina, for example, you can buy more than $500 or $1,000 per week. So customers actually consciously limited by the government and banking system to not buy dollars. And having this like decentralized access to dollars actually helps those people to buy it. And that's what I was talking about, like having an open dollar standard helps US to essentially increase access to dollars around the world.
Let me ask you, I was going to ask you on that. Is the USDC and Tether, are those kind of loopholes to those local regulations in countries like Argentina, where they say you can't buy more than 1500 US dollar, but if you were to go and buy 2000 Tether, is that kind of a loophole around it legally?
Well, it's not a pure loophole because if you buy it through the bank, you still have to KYC with the local bank and there will be information. So I think right now the restriction is purely on dollars, but not on stables. But I think the difference is that if those governments will like restrict the banks from doing it, there is still a giant market of kind of like P2P dollar exchange. And then I think right now that exchange is happening through cash and more in those countries, the adoption goes to stablecoin because it's a much safer medium. Because if you deal with cash, you like as a person who like perform those exchanges, you like exposed to a lot of risk, physical risk. And then with digital dollar, it will become much easier. So I don't necessarily consider it as a loophole, but I think it makes it much harder to prevent people from accessing it if they want to. And I think with CBDC, actually then like US will be solely responsible for like block this access. While like if kind of dollars are in this open circulation, it's not a direct responsibility of federal government to control it anymore, which significantly increase access to it.
And do you think countries like Argentina, and we'll just put Argentina in the category of countries experiencing high local fiat inflation, are they benefiting their economy by preventing people in their country from making foreign exchange trades? Is that something you think we'll look back on and look at how foolish that economic policy was, or do you see the validity of and the effectiveness of those policies?
Well, I think like limiting this access like historically didn't work well. The currency is not typically the problem. The problem is actual issues with the economy and like major industries. And I think, like, the individual people will still strive to, like, if your currency depreciates, the individual people will try to find a way to prevent them from it. So I think the main path for those countries is to, like, actually find the, like, root cause of the issue and make reforms to address that rather than, like, trying to limit access to currencies. I mean, I grew up in the 90s in Russia, and I think it was very similar situation there. Yeah, ruble was losing its value every day. And then if you want to buy anything like significant, like dishwasher or washing machine, you only can buy it in dollars. So the entire country was basically transacting in dollars with like physical dollars.
Wow.
So, and then the same is happening in Argentina. Like if you buy any significant purchase, like above basically your like a dinner price, then people want to have it in dollars. If you buy a phone, let's say from someone, people want to sell this phone to you in dollars, not in Argentinian peso.
And the ultimate, the effect of that would be you have less GDP. I mean, less trades are happening because you may have enough money in your local currency, but for you to go and get the US dollar, make the trade, introduces friction, and friction decreases transactions. That's interesting And do you see, I mean, ultimately, even USDC is backed by the dollar, which is determined by the federal government's printing. To me, I think of this as like, that's still, it's still a stopgap, and it may be a short-term stopgap for the next few years or so until, like, the ultimate scarce resource, as I see it, is energy. And the, if you can tie energy to currency, then you could have, and that's what Bitcoin does. And that seems to be, like, that premise alone just seems to be so, so compelling that I just don't, how does anything else exist? You know, how do we not, I mean, does this make sense to you? Do you think, like, okay, it's eventually just going to be on Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrency that is backed essentially by mining? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
No, I think Bitcoin definitely have this value proposition in terms of like trying to basically capture the value of energy in it. I think there are potential shortcomings to it with scientific progress. Cost of energy actually could become really cheap. Even now, if US will like change its path and will just start adopting nuclear reactors of third and fourth generation that essentially take the nuclear waste of the that we accumulated through many years of the original technology and will just like start actively building and using those, the cost of energy will become really low. And then at that point, that securing by energy proposition will no longer work. I mean, I worked on Bitcoin a lot at Cash App, and I've been a fan of the whole idea since like, I think I first learned it 2010 about it. I think the important parts there was like self-custody, which people like really lost track of. And then I think another problem was that the Bitcoin as a standard like didn't stop evolving a while ago. And now to even like keep the Bitcoin transaction cost efficient, Lightning Network was created. But I think comparing to Solana, it still feels like a lot of extra steps, which makes technology like really complex and like in, as a result, like less reliable if it will be used at scale. So I think I still like Bitcoin as a reserve currency. I don't know if that's sustainable with potentially decreasing cost of energy significantly, which could happen. And then I think there are like a lot of other things we can tokenize to provide good addition to stable coins. I think Tether, for example, tokenized gold, so you can have tokenized gold, but it still doesn't seem like people actively want to use it because the volume of like USDC and USDT usage is so much higher than the usage of tokenized gold. So I think in terms of like practical adoption, it will be much easier to get the higher adoption of USDT and USDC rather than trying to adopt something like Bitcoin as a form of payment. Because I think as long as we will solve self-custody problem and everybody will be aware of it, we will be on the completely next level in terms of access to payment infrastructure globally. And I think Bitcoin actually creates this extra friction to it because there is always this aspect of conversion between Bitcoin and local currency that is much less predictable than conversion of dollar or USD, of dollar. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Do you see the Otter wallet as being similar to Cash App in the sense that I think Cash App, when you buy crypto in Cash App, you can't transfer it outside. So I can't just transfer it to my own Ledger wallet. It's like trapped within the Cash App ecosystem. That's also how, what's that other app? There's another popular.
Venmo?
No. It became under scrutiny recently because of the trading GameStop. That's on the tip of my tongue. It'll come to me. But they allow you to buy crypto in there, but they don't allow you to trade outside. Is that something you think has to happen by regulation reasons? Or do you see Otter being a place where you can make these trades, but also just exchange it for other currencies in the open ecosystem of crypto?
Well, Otter is designed very differently from Cash App because mm-hmm. self-custody is a core of our product. So you always have full mm-hmm. control of your funds. That means we don't decide who you can send your crypto to. So all crypto you hold in Otter wallet, you can send to any address within Solana blockchain, and which include USDC, Solana, and a lot of other okay. tokens that they're available. And even more, actually, Circle is releasing this product that will allow us permissionlessly bridge USDC to any other chain. So with that, in next, I think, 3 months, you would be able to send USDC from Otter wallet, that is Solana-based wallet, to an Ethereum-based or Polygon-based wallet. So you have like actually full freedom to move your USDC to any other chain. That's cool. A big difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely planning to keep it open. As long as you have those funds, you can send it almost anywhere.
Yeah. And this is not, so you were at Cash App for a while. You were an engineer there. Did you start to see the company going in a direction that you felt like, not to criticize Cash App, that's not what I'm trying to do, but what are they trying to do? And why did you feel like it was necessary to go and start a new thing?
No, that's a great question. Yeah, I actually have a lot of respect for Cash App leadership and Jack. I think the part that made me start the company was two things that I couldn't do at Cash App. One is that I think Cash App and Block in general are 100% focused on Bitcoin. And when I, and we talked a little bit about Bitcoin just a few minutes ago, I didn't feel that Bitcoin is the right foundation to essentially create an open financial platform on top of blockchain. That's why if I wanted to invest my time building something on Solana, I couldn't continue that at Cash App. And I think another problem is, like, historically, Cash App was created as a centralized custodian of Bitcoin. And it's just technically really difficult for them to move away from that model to a self-custody. And another problem with Bitcoin self-custody, if you go there, the Bitcoin transactions are very slow. And then, like, when you transfer Bitcoin between Cash App accounts, you essentially just change balances in Cash App database. You're not really transferring any mm-hmm. Bitcoin. But that's why, like, for Cash App to really create a product that will be based on self-custody, it will be really hard to do it on Bitcoin while, like, preserving this experience of being fast. And I think these were the main reasons why I felt like that dream of open financial system that anyone in the world can easily access and transact super fast was not possible while, like, I was working at Cash App, and that's what I wanted to solve with Otter when I left.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's an amazingly obvious and important mission. Just say anyone anywhere can send US dollars to start with on the form of USDC to anybody else in the world. And I imagine you guys have you'll be limited into the regulations of the countries that people are in. You know, you mentioned the Argentinian regulation. Mm-hmm. So that would be imposed on the banking side. And that would be something you guys just share with them, saying you're only allowed to move this much. But mm-hmm. ultimately, you can still move money. And I think that opens the door, like opens the floodgates to the global economy in a much easier way. You could see this on, like, Wise. TransferWise started to do it. I think they broke open the door in the biggest way. Obviously, Western Union, you know, was the original. Mm-hmm. They're the OG on, like, international payments. And I kind of see you guys as, like, the third wave, where you had Western Union taking cash and fiat all across the world, and then you have TransferWise operating on the banking rails, and then, you know, crypto operating on the crypto rails. So yeah, I really enjoyed our conversation. I hope you guys continue to grow. Is there anything that you're looking for or would help you guys continue to see success, particularly on a systemic level? Like what can listeners do to help support crypto? I'm so confident in you and your team, but I want to make sure that the regulations and the support, like if the government were to say, hey, there's no more crypto, it's like we're all out of business.
Yeah.
What do people do?
That's a great question. I think one is to start like actively using those products, and not just Otter. You can even like start using Coinbase to send money to each other. That will still in the end contribute of adoption of stable coins as a form of payment. I actually think that Coinbase is doing a lot of good work in terms of like improving the regulation, and it will be very interesting to see how this recent SEC case will be evolving. I think one actually very cool but hidden feature in Coinbase that exists is that you can go to the Coinbase app, go to like, I think like somewhere in the settings, and then you can find this menu that basically allow you to see all the different politicians in your state and their basically stance on crypto. And I think like using this tool, you can essentially predict, depending on who you will vote for in your like each state, like how the regulation will evolve. So yeah, kind of like giving free ads to Coinbase, but I think it's a very important and hidden feature inside it. Maybe we should build it. But yeah, you can clearly see like every politician and how they supporting like regulations around crypto. And it really matters on each state level, because for example, when we launched our like banking product, like it's not available for people in New York state, because New York like create like this impossible regulation that basically prevent people from connecting to existing banking system. And I think it's like purely driven by like subsidies from like some maybe Wall Street actors or like big bank actors to just cut the access. And this is definitely like, if that will continue from New York state to others, then yeah, people will just not be able to connect their banks and will kind of get stuck in the old system. So don't be like New York. Be like California.
Is California more pro crypto?
I think it's kind of neutral. I hope it. I think if you actually look at some of the politicians on that list, it can easily become anti-crypto. So it's important to kind of like keep an eye on it. But yeah, now talking about it, we need to add this feature to Otter.
You should. This is it. Like this is we're in like a digital political war on this. And it's like I this is why I'm like, everyone's gotta be pushing towards this, like tweeting at your senators and your representatives. I mean, Florida and Texas, Wyoming famously passed DAO laws. It seems like red states are leaning more towards crypto friendly, but it doesn't have to be the case. So yeah. I think that's 100% right. And yeah, Coinbase doesn't need the promotion, but that little feature in there, I'm certainly going to check out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think this is bad when crypto is politicized to be like red or blue. I think it's actually neutral to it. And if anything, it will guarantee a much better political competition in the future. Because I think what we saw last year in Canada is an example when, I think with Canadian trackers protest, that the government, like the leading party in the government, could easily impose certain restriction on supporters of other opinion. And I think that's what I'm worried about states with like debate heating up around like next election, the dominating party could easily use like banking system as a form of oppression for people who will have a different opinion. And I think both parties could fall into using this as an instrument. So it's not like specific to Democrats or Republicans. It's just like we need to make sure that they won't have that control. And I think that's what a danger of CBDC. Yeah, because they can claim that you did something illegal by like just protesting against an issue, and then suddenly all your money is frozen.
Yeah, that's worst case scenario. So that's something that I think we need to develop a systemic or society-wide immune system against. And yeah, keep leaning into that. And congrats on all the progress. And I hope you guys keep crushing it. Download Otter Wallet. All right, Alexi, I'll let you run. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.